It was certainly towards the bottom of Yudat Amidbet, 10 lines up. Here the Gemara is still bringing the Braita that describes what took place in the Mishnah, right, in Gittin. So here it says, Tashma Akhila Perot Ketat. What's the case of Akhila Perot that is mentioned in the Mishnah Gittin that says, we didn't let people take from the Chasim Mishubadim, from encumbered property. Alright, Shigazal Sadeh Mechavero, Bahari Yosa Mitachat Yodo. Again, so it's almost cryptic that the Braita is suggesting. It says that he stole a friend from his friend, and now it's coming out of his hand. I mean, what does that mean? You're saying Mitachat Yodo, that's the problem that it's going to have. He goes to gain the principal back. He takes the principal from even encumbered property. And the perot you can only collect from unencumbered property. So now, what's the case over here? What's the possibility? If you take the brisa literally, it's talking about a gazlan. Miman gobi. What is a gazlan? What entitlement does he have? He's a thief. What do you mean he's gover the karen? He doesn't have to charge any compensation. He stole the property. So it can't be talking about literally the gazlan himself. El alav, what must be the case? Don't you gazal sadeh mechaveru? He stole from his friend. Again, the case that we had before, basically similar setup that we had with Shevach Perot, that the Gemara is suggesting that there's a third party involved here. The third party is this person stole it, and after stealing it, he basically sells someone the Brooklyn Bridge, he sells them the property that is not his, and then the person who bought it, Lokea, who bought it, improved the property. And since he improved the property, now he's entitled to compensation for both the Keren, right, the principal that he laid out to buy the property, and the Shevach, and that which he laid out in order to improve the value of the property. And so, in that instance, he is then entitled to make a claim back, both for what is called here the Karen and for the Perot. Right? That the, not just the Shevach, but actually the Perot, that he created something that was Perot on this property. So now, I'm a Rabbah. Rabbah shows up and says, no, we can explain this differently. I have a different way to explain the case in the Braisa. What's the case here? Stole a field from his friend. It was full of perot. So the Gemara brings down that the Rambam did not have this scarcity. He ate the perot on the field twice. He then dug ditches and did things that actually detracted from the value of the property. So now, So now the question about Gavoy, we said before, it can't be just two parties here, the Gazlan and the Gzal, because the Gazlan has no right to make any claims here. He doesn't own anything that he can go back and say, oh, give me my Karen back. But who does have a right here? The Gzal has a right here. But our assumption until this point was that the property that was outstanding, the Gzal could go grab, and he'd be back to, he would net out as having lost nothing, because he would just take his property back that was stolen from him. But over here, now we introduce the case where the Gazlan actually detracted, ruined the value of the property. By ruining the value of the property, when he comes and claims the property, takes the property back, that's not sufficient to cover the loss that he took when this person stole the property from him. When he comes to make up the differential in the Karen and the principal that is not there anymore, I mean the detracted value versus the value of the property that was stolen, that he can collect from the Gazlan. He can take that from the Nechasim Mishubadim, even of the Gazlan. On the other hand, Balik Zal, the Gavot Peirot, he comes to collect on the Peirot, right, then, Govem Nechasim B'nei Chorim, then he may only collect from, right, Nechasim B'nei Chorim, from free and clear property. So, again, Rav is suggesting a new case where there is no third party. He's suggesting a case where there's only two parties, and the claimant here is an Nigzal. Rather than, before we suggested it was a Gazlan, and we couldn't make it make sense, that's why he brought in a third party here. Claimant is an Nigzal, and again, it's where he caused the property to detract in value. Last suggestion is Rabbi Varfuna, Mark Yigon, Shinadu Amisikim. The reason there's a claim here is that the Ganav stole it, he stole the property, he took the property, and then the property was stolen from him. It was stolen from him by Mesikin, some sort of marauders, and it's Simakum, right? These marauders that go around, they force people off their property. So here too, he was forced off the property. Now, we know this Gemara, we did this together in Baba Kamo. The Mishnah Baba Kamo says what? Is the Ganav responsible in this case or not? Well, it depends. Depends if he's the cause for the property being seized. If the property would have seized whether or not he was holding it, they could say, so they were taking it, it's your property, they were taking it either way, so why should I be responsible? There's your property, go get it back, wherever you want, there's your Kala Faneka. The other hand, if the Mesikim took it because of the Gazlan, for some reason he has some altercation with the law, there's some other reason, alternative reason why they came to this property in particular because of this gazlan, then the ganaver, gazlan, is responsible to return the property to the balim. So that's the assumption. The assumption is that it was taken, been mistaken, and it was taken, and therefore he cannot, the nigzal cannot access his property again. He has a claim against his gazlan. Now the claim against the gazlan will break down into two parts. Banigzal, right, the one who the property was stolen from, he can come, the gavota keren, when he comes to get the principal back from this gazlan, there you can collect even from encumbered property of the gazlan. So the gazlan had sold other property that he owned beforehand, you can go and collect back from that property. Banigzal is supposed to pay road, and if he comes to collect on the pay road, then he only can collect from nechassim b'nei charim, from the free and clear property of the gazlan. Now the Gemara is going to explain why each one of them didn't hold like the other, didn't use the other's answer. Gemara says, Rabba lo amar to Rabba bar Rav Huna. Rabba did not use the answer of Rabba bar Rav Huna. Arehi yotam itachat yado. Bedina mashmo. It says in the Brisa, this cryptic version of the Brisa that we're trying to explain, it says, Vahari yotam itachat yado. It was taken from him. Taken from him, according to Rabba, sounds like it was taken by din, meaning that we actually bathed and went and took it away from him. Why did they take it away from him? Because it was a gazlan. He stole the property. Now Bezin taking the property back and giving it back to Nigzal, the one who was stolen from. So based on that, he explains the Brisa as being a case where he's taking the property back, but there's detracted value on the property. On the other hand, Rabba bar Rav Huna, lo amar ki Rabba. Rabba bar Rav Huna does not hold like Rabba, or did not explain the Brisa like Rabba, because it says, Hari yotam itak yado, be'ina mashma. And when it says, Hari yotam itak yado, it sounds like it is still intact. Nothing has changed in the property. It sounds like it's the same property that he's taken away. So they're basically arguing and explaining the Brisa how to interpret this phrase called Vahari Yotami Tachat Yado. Rabba believes it sounds more like it was taken midin, taken, not that some other marauders came and took it away and it's not here anymore, but rather we've taken out midin. Now he has to create a circumstance where there's money owed to the nigzal. How does he do that? He has the gazlan to track value. He did something that distracted value from the property. On the other hand, Rabba Barhuna means Hari Yotami Tachat Yado sounds like the property comes back, or is still intact. It's exactly as it was before. It's left his hands, but it's exactly the same property. So he creates a case where marauders came and took the property. The property is still the same property he took. But now the gazlan is the problem, because he caused the property to be taken away by these marauders, and therefore he owes the money. And Rashi offers the fourth interpretation here. Rashi Amar, this tzadim tzani. It was written in this tzadim. What does that mean? Kigom. It means that there's two claimants over here. Kigom. Stole a property from his friend full of peirot, and then he eats the peirot. And then he sells the field. So when he goes to take the principal, the lokeach, the buyer who bought it from the gazlan, he has a claim against the gazlan for the principal for that he bought. Then he takes even from encumbered property. But when it was stolen from this individual, two things were stolen from him. One was the property. Number two is it was Malaya Peirot. It was full of Peirot. So now, when he went back to the buyer of the property, he just grabbed the property. He takes the property back. He's gotten his principal back. But what about the Peirot? He didn't get his Peirot back. That is a claim against the gazlan. So that he goes back to the gazlan. He can only collect meat. Right? Exiled with both Peirot. So actually here, the way Ravash explains is there are actually two claimants over here. There's both claimants are against the gazlan. One is the Nigzal, and one is the Lokeach. Lokeach has a claim of principle against the Gazlan, and the Nigzal has a claim of Peirot against the Gazlan. And the principle that the Lokeach wants from the Gazlan, he can take even from Mishubadim, from encumbered property. On the other hand, the Nigzal is trying to collect his Peirot back from the Gazlan. He can only take back, he can only get that from Bnei Chori.
What was the problem of Gvias Peirot in the first place? Now, what was the problem we're trying to solve here? The fact is, we had a Brisa.
Right, the Brisa is cryptic. So
it's made of Peirot, which is against what we learned previously.
Not necessarily. The Brisa over here is just makes a cryptic statement. We have to explain what the Brisa means. We don't have any explanation of what the Brisa is.
Because we had an earlier Brisa.
We had a Brisa by Shevach, which is a problem.
Peirot and Shevach.
Right, but there's Shevach, which was, no, there the Brisa talks about Shevach, and that was against Shmuel's position. That was the problem with the previous Brisa. All right. So that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara is trying to explain the Mishnah and Gittin. Then the Gemara came up, solved the problem with the Mishnah and Gittin. The Gemara says, you can't explain it that way, because I have a Brisa that explains the Mishnah and Gittin differently. The first part of the Brisa that the Gemara brought was Shevach seems to explicitly state that there was a Gazlan involved, which would present the problem for Rav Nachman's explanation of Shmuel. The Gemara then explained, no, the Mishnah is talking about Bachol. Since the Brisa is already cryptic, we have to answer it. We switch it from Gazlan to Bachol. Then the Gemara moved on to the next part of that Brisa, the next part of the Brisa, which we're discussing now, is Peirot. How to explain the taste of Peirot? So you have three explanations. One explanation uses the same explanation we gave by Shevach Peirot, which is that we're talking about a case of a third party that was stolen and sold to a third party. The second explanation was Rabba, which was about that the Gazlan detracted value. Third explanation is Rabba Baruna, that it was taken by Mesikin. And then the fourth explanation is Ravashi here, which you have two claimants over here. One claimant is the buyer of the property, who's going against the Gazlan for his core, the principal. And the Nigzal is going up against the Gazlan for the payroll. Mark says, Ben the Rabba, Ben the Rabba Baruna, Milva Tehu. We have a problem here in Deha, which is that whether it's Rabba, or Rabba Rav Huna, why are you allowed to collect from encumbered property over here? What's your right for the right? What's the right of the nigzal to go ahead and collect from encumbered property? All you have here is a milva al teh. Milva teh. When it comes to milva al teh, you can only take from free and clear property. You cannot take it from the encumbered property, because they both explain the case to be where the Karen, where the principal is being taken from the Gazlan by the Nigzal, and Nigzal is then entitled to what? Be taken away from him from his Mishubadin. But the obligation of the Gazlan towards the Nigzal is only a Novel Pet. There's no documented obligation over here. How is any buyer supposed to protect themselves? How do they know that the property was stolen? Why should they be on the hook for the fact that they bought property after this thief stole property and then sold it to someone else? They have no idea that it was stolen. They have no idea it's stolen. There's no color. There's no fault. And how can they protect themselves? So it's a milva al peh. And milva al peh, you do not take or claim out of what? Nechas mishubadin. So how are they going to explain the case? They explain the case of our Mishnah that they can exalt them to the Gazlan and take encumbered property. How can he do that? They brought him to court. The Nigzal already bought the Gazlan to court. And the court said he's chayav to return the money, return the property to him. So right, that's chalei suhu, that has a cult, that everybody knows about. If everybody knows about it, then the subsequent buyer is buyer beware, because they know that this guy already has stolen property, he owes that money. So they know that they could be miturach mishavu shavte, that he could come and take it back. Because first, the psak din makes it as if it's, kishtar, and number two, gives it a kolot. It's well known that. Says came in the Rashi says came in the Chayv who made nice little color, but like the milk of a shtar. It's exactly like it was written in a shtar. Now the Gemara says, wait a minute, he hockey payrot nami. If he went to din, right? So if the Beis Din paskin on the Karen, he paskin on the payrot, he should be able to collect the payrot also from what the encumbered property. Why is that? What's the reason that we don't allow you to collect from payrot? The reason we don't allow you to collect from payrot is something that is what? It was unlimited. Something that you cannot control for. Right, that's the whole principle in this Mishnah, the principle of this Gemara, is that we only want you to be able to collect from encumbered or buyers to be at risk for something that they could assess up front and adjust the price for. If there's a risk which they can assess, and based on assessment, they will change the price, then we say, fine, they took that risk, they understood it, and they incorporated it in the price. When there's unlimited risk or unassessable risk, then we can't say that the buyers, when they bought it, they adjusted the price, because there's no way they could adjust the price. I mean, if we're talking about the fact that there's a possibility the property could be taken away from them, then they can assess that. They know he sold so much property beforehand. They know how much he's on the hook for. They can assess that and say, there's the chance that the property is taken from me, and they adjust the price for that. But when it comes to payroll, they don't know how much the buyer is going to invest in the property, how much the buyer is going to change the property, how much, again, the case with the woman, how much he's going to eat, the daughter, how much they're going to eat. That's they have an inability, unlimited risk. And therefore, they can't adjust the price for it. They can't adjust the price for it, we don't put them at risk. So over here, you have a case where they went to Beis Din. When the Beis Din paskin that the Gazlan chayev for the property and the payroll, we have now just quantified the risk that's involved over here. Once you quantify the risk over here, then the buyer should have been able to adjust the price, right, and assess that risk or incorporate that risk into what they bought. They incorporate risk into bought. Why are we protecting them? Right? Why are we protecting them at all? They should be able to take both for Karen and for payroll. So my unbelievable answer here, it says, Shama Badin al Karen, below my din al payroll. He went to Beis Din over the principal, but not for the payroll. So I ask an obvious question. My Pascha. I mean, why would you ever think such a thing? Why would the Tan ever have a case like this? The guy went to go to the Beis Din. Why didn't he bring the whole case? What did he just bring half the case for? It says, some of the milsa, kikava inish karna, tava beresha. That a person, when they toveya, in the beginning, they look for the principal. Afterwards, then they go for the payroll. I mean, that they go for the biggest item. Like, oh, you own my property. You got to give me back the property. So that's all. He wants to make sure he gets his property back. Once he's got his property back, then he looks to get, you know, I mean, the, all the extras that he had on top of that. The biggest issue he's after is the principal of the property, since that's the largest, right, loss that he has. So once he's got that return, then he'll go look for the payroll. So there is basically a concept that a person would go to din over the keren, and then they later deal with the payroll. Right, now, my question, this is going back to Shmuel's, one of Shmuel's principles. My says, "B'shavar Shmuel lokeach mikazlan letzlei shvacha." Is it really true that a person who buys from a gazlan does not have shevach? That's really what put us into this whole, right, into this whole sequence of cases here. We have a number of statements by Shmuel. One of the statements by Shmuel is that was when it comes to a buyer from a gazlan, the buyer from the gazlan is only entitled to, right, ma'ot, and not entitled to shevach. He's never entitled to shevach, opposed to Rav, who says you are entitled to shevach. So all the questions that we brought, Mishnah Kitin, all these questions we brought were basically on Shmuel's principle that you don't collect shevach. In all these cases here, we show there was shevach, and he has to answer up. One of the answers he gave is that Bachov is an exception. Right, Bachov does not count. That's another exception. Now we're going to come up with another exception for Shmuel because he's going to have to deal with this problem. What's the problem here? It says that Shmuel really says such a thing. V'hamar Rav Shmuel, the Rav Chinen Abar Shilat. Shmuel said to Rav Chinen Abar Shilat, who was a sofer, when you write a contract, imlech v'katuv, check before you write the following things, shufra, shivcha, upeve. Before you write down that the seller is obligated for these items, please, you know, check whether that's the case, whether he really is obligating himself in these things. And we saw these three things yesterday. One is shufra, is that he takes from the best of his property, he's going to be on the line for it. Number two, shevach, that it'll cover the shevach, and peyre, that it'll cover the peyrot. So here's the case, right, that he's putting himself on the, he has to ask and put himself on the line. But my, what is the case over here that he's telling him that you must incorporate these things into the sale document? Even bachov, if you're talking about a bachov, means like peyre. There are three items that he listed here. They were shufra, shivcha, and peyre. We know from Shmuel, there's another statement we had of Shmuel yesterday, which is that Shmuel said, Rama Shmuel, bachov go ve'et the shevach, shevach in of al peyre lo. That a bachov is allowed to go and take away from the buyer. When he takes encumbered property for his loan, the creditor can go along and take the property plus the shevach. He may not take the payroll. So if you're asking about a contract here, which is asking whether he can take the payroll or not, he doesn't have to go claim payroll from the seller to him because the bachov is not entitled to take it. He's not entitled to take it. He's left with the payroll. So why is there a question about payroll? So the case can't be bachov. That presents a problem for Shmuel. Because on yesterday's doc, right, the answer we gave for all the cases was it was a bachov. Because by a bachov, Shmuel agrees that he can collect from the shevach. Now we have a problem because Bachov doesn't solve our problem over here. Now what are you going to do? El alav v'lokeach migazlan. The case here must be that a buyer who's buying from the gazlan, and we're asking the seller, what is he going to put himself on the line for over here? The fact that we ask the seller that what he's going to put in line, and one of the items is shevach, that proves that you are entitled to collect shevach, right? That the lokeach, the buyer, has the right to collect shevach. So the says, Amar Rav Yosef hakol ma'iskina kigon sheyesh lo karko. That the gazlan has property. Right, the gazlan has properties. Now, here comes another exception to this rule of Shmuel, when you cannot collect shevach. Right, it's karka. Why? So now, let's just remember, what's the reason for Shmuel before? What was the reason that Shmuel says you cannot collect shevach? The buyer from the gazlan can only collect the keren and not the shevach, because it's mekse karibit. It looks like you charged interest. Right, what's wrong? It looks like you charged interest, because here, you gave him money. The property was really not his. So there's no underlying object, right, that he is buying with his money. So basically it looks like you lend him money, and when he hands you the money back, he hands you money twice. Now truthfully, he really owes you the money, because it's really investment, return of investment, which is that you invest in the property, returning you the keren plus the shevach. But it's mechzei karibit. It still looks like, since there's no underlying object in the transaction, it looks like there's interest, because you gave him money, and he's handing you back money plus. So it looks like he's paying you for the loan, he's compensating you for the loan. Now, Hamalei Abaye, Abaye says, "V'chi miter l'vosa abisa b'makom sheish lo karka." All right, Abaye says, just because you have property, does that allow you to create cases of interest? Now, this we're going to see later in the Masechta. This is a case of sa'abisa. You're not allowed to borrow, right, a sa'a and then pay back with a sa'a where there is fluctuating market values. Because what's our fear? Our fear is that you gave him a sa'a and later on he's going to pay you back. Right, the sa'ah, but not going to sa'ah itself, it's going to pay you back the value of the sa'ah. When he pays back the top value of the sa'ah, the value or the market price of the sa'ah went up, it looks like he's paying you interest. Basically, you lent him money now, And then he's going to pay you back the market value of the commodity later on. The market value of the commodity later on has gone up in price. Looks like he's paying you interest. So we don't see an exception later on in the Gemara that if you have property, then it's not classified as interest. That's what exactly what you're suggesting over here. If he has property and you lend him money, he gives you back the money plus, then that's not really, that's not interest. It doesn't look like interest anymore. Gemara says, no, I'm like, hasam halva, hasam tvinis. It's very clear here, there's a big difference between the case over here. The case here is only metzik ribit. Why does it only look like ribit? Because there really was a transaction here. The gazlan, this thief, sold the property to the buyer. He didn't lend him money. Had he known it was stolen property, the guy would never give him the money. So here, it's a transaction. If it is a transaction, right, then when he gives the money back, we say, whoa, the property's gone because the nigzal came and took his property. There's no underlying object. It looks like a loan. Now, if we could make it somehow not look like a loan again, then we're going to say there's no interest. How do we make it not look like a loan? If the gazlan himself has property. The gazlan himself has property, we could say that the lokeach has the right to go and grab that property as compensation. So instead of taking the property, what's the gazlan doing? Paying him off with the money to say, don't take that property. Here, take this money. That's right. Then we can create something that looks like a transaction or has some object underlying it. Once we do that, it's not mechzeh to ribbit. That's not true by saw b'saw. So it's built around a loan. It wasn't built around a transaction, it's built around a loan. If it's built around a loan, then we can't say it's not necessarily just because you own property. That those that say the Amr Yosef Yado, that he made a kinyan on it from him. It's not clear to me exactly what the kinyan is here. Rashi says, Allah Shabak, Dabale Mikuyab Mishata Mecher. That he's really chayav from him from the time of the mecher, the time of the sale. That means that he obligates himself somehow in the shevach at the time of the sale, when he's konam yado, he makes some sort of kinyan, which reinforces this ability to collect the shevach. Since he has a kinyan up front, then that kinyan is going to obligate him in the shevach later on. Right? So konash kinyan, some of everybody asks the same question, in the economic, chimut levot sub sub makush konam yado, just because you obligate yourself through a kinyan up front, that means you can land in a situation that's going to make a repeat. Over there, again, it's a loan. Over here, it's a transaction. So here, we have more ability to fix it. Now, the question is, and Tosfos asked the question here, too, is that if he made the kinyan up front on the shevach, then why isn't that incorporated into the contract? Well, if he made a kinyan up front, that means at the time of the sale, he made a kinyan. He says, I'm obligating myself not only in the Karen, but also in the Shevach. And they did it some sort of form of kinyan, like kinyan khalif and something, that obligates him in the Shevach. If that's the case, incorporate in the document. If it's incorporated in the Shtar, that means what? You should be able to collect from encumbered property, both for the Karen and from the payroll. So Tosfos says, to solve this problem, Tosfos says, alright, why is it included in the Shtar over here? He says, because when you make a kinyan on something that is not yet existent, not extant yet. The Shevach does not exist today. So you made a kinyan on something that's almost lo ba'al yolam. And since it's lo ba'al yolam, right, so you're allowed to make the kinyan here, but we're not going to write it down in the documents. We're not going to document the kinyan because it's something that's about something in the future. It's a kinyan on something in the future. So when do we say that kinyanim get written down in the shtar? That's when the kinyan is about something that exists today. Then you write in the shtar. But since it's a kinyan about something in the future, we're not going to incorporate it into the shtar. So that kinyan is not incorporated in the shtar, and therefore he'll only be able to get from unencumbered property, not from encumbered property. Even though it will not look like mechzik ribit, because they made this kinyan, looks transactional in nature. Nevertheless, you can't go and you can't collect it from encumbered property. That's true. I mean, I will note here, I spoke to when I talked to the DAF yesterday, I just tell you, I think that's very important to understand the difference here. The Gemara says, yesterday's DAF says that people will not throw their money away because of right, people will not lend money without collateralizing loan. That's why I come and believe it's totally so fair. It's a mistake. They're missing from the document. It's missing. Why is that? Today we don't understand that concept. Why? Because we get paid interest for loans today. When you get paid interest for loans, you get compensated for the risk that you take. And therefore, you would be mailing to take uncollateralized loans. You lend money on an uncollateralized matter because you're getting compensated in the interest rate for that fact. But in their time, they were lending the money, and there was no interest. You weren't allowed to charge interest to the right party. You were two Jews. They were lending it to each other. There was no charging of interest. Don't charge interest. There is no way that you would take an uncollateralized loan over a collateralized loan because you're not getting compensated for the risk. So the only way you would lend money is in a collateralized manner. And that's why the Chachamim say it's so fair. So you have to, it's very important to understand that here. I think the Gemara in Gittin is about ability to assess risk and incorporate it into the price. If you can incorporate it to the price, the chamim let it go. If you cannot incorporate the price, they will not let it go. And that's what Tikkun Olam Gittin was about. And that's what the loans were about. The reason that they won't let you go with uncollateralized loans is because nobody would take that risk if you don't get compensated for it. So that means automatically we're going to assume it's a collateralized loan. All right, now, Gufa. Now we're channeling another principle of Shmuel. Amar Shmuel, Bachov Govayt the Shevach. And Bachov gets to take the Shevach, but he does not take the payroll. Which means, basically, a creditor can come to the Nigzal, to the guy who bought it off his Gezlan, or a person who bought property prior to this point in time, takes the property and says, oh, you invest in the property? Thank you very much. I'm taking everything. So Amar Rava, Teda, Shikach, Kotei Blo Amokher. I'll tell you that this is true, that what Shmuel says is right. Why? Because this is what the seller writes to the buyer in the documents. When he guarantees him the sale, what does he say? Ana ikum, right? I will get up. Veshafei, and the word here, ashfei, means ashkit, I will silence. Vatei, but the hair, and I will clean up. Vamrit, and, empty. Zvine ilain, right? Inun vamalehon. This sale that I give to you is plus any. Not here investment, but physical investment you made in the property, work you did on it, to ship pay home, increase in value, vikum kadamach, and I will place it in front of you, but speed vina, denan bikabal alayu, and I will, right, strictly, what? Savei vina, denan bikabal alayu, and alohi, and I will take care of this. The sale, I will ensure that you get, right, I accept all responsibilities to ensure that it comes back to you. So what do you see is included in this? The fact that he guarantees the shevach. If he guarantees the shevach, that must mean that the shevach can be taken away from the buyer. Right? He wouldn't have to guarantee and say the shevach can be taken if the shevach can't be taken from the buyer. The fact that it's included in the document tells me what? That there is ability to have the shevach be taken away. So I'm a little bit up in the rubble, I would be asked if that's the case. Matano, the lok simple, right? A matano that does not have it written in it, then okinami, right? Okinami, the lok tarif shifka. Then he shouldn't be able to take the shevach. The Baal Kol should not be able to shevach. When you give a gift, you don't guarantee the shevach. There is no such contractual obligation that says that I'm going to protect you and all the shevach over here. Since there's no such obligation, that means that the Baal Kol should not be able to take it. Why? Because the Baal Kol, because it's not written, the Baal Kol can't take it because he won't get compensated. The one that's giving gifts. Amalian? That's right. By a matana, you cannot. The Baal Kol, the creditor, cannot come and take it away from him with the shevach. It says, how could it be that a matana is better than a mecher? Do you realize that a gift will be better? A guy who pays money for the property, then the boss flow, the creditor comes to take away both his property and any investment, all the sheriff that he has in the property, takes everything. If he gave, it was gifted, the property guy paid this, didn't pay, was dying for it, he was gifted the property, the creditor can only come and take away the principal and not the sheriff. So he says, you're right. It's better and better. Why is it better? What does it mean, better and better? Because we look at what the law, in the case where the gift, the guy who got the gift, did he cause a loss to the Baal Kol? Did he cause a loss to the creditor? The answer is, with regard to the principal, he caused a loss to the creditor, because that's where the creditor is going to take his payment from. So the creditor can come and take that away. With regard to the shevach, the creditor had no right to the shevach because he didn't own the property. Till he comes to collect the property, he didn't own it. So the shevach for the value added here was simply added by the person who received the gift, the recipient of the gift. Recipient of the gift, he caused no loss to Baal Kol in that manner. So because no loss to the Baal Kol in that manner, we're not going to obligate him to give up the shevach. Oh, so you ask me, okay, so the buyers say the same thing. When the guy buys the property, why don't we say the exact same thing? The karen is a loss for the creditor, but the shevach, the investment he made in the property, is not causing any loss to the Baal Kol. That happened before he ever took possession of the property. Say no, because over there, the creditor says, I'm owed the money, I want the money here, and I can get it out of your shevach. You go take that back from the mocha. Since you have recourse from someone else, then we allow the Baal Kol to take it. Over here by the Batanai, there's no recourse. They're not going to say, because you know loss, there is no recourse, don't take that shevach away. I have a braisa that supports the position of Mar Shmuel, but Hukuna and his friends set it up somewhere else, and that doesn't become a proof to Mar Shmuel. Tanya, someone sends a field to his friend, and now it comes out of his possession. Again, this is similar to the cryptic braisa that we had before. When he takes the Karen, the principal, he takes it away from the encumbered property. When it comes to the Sheva, the improvement property takes it away from even the unencumbered property. They set up a different case. Lokeach migazlan. So exactly, this is the machlokes we had before about how to explain that braisa. The braisa that we asked a question from the Mishnah in Gittin that had a braisa on it explaining what is shevach peiros in that Mishnah in Gittin. Gemara said shevach peiros kesas, and it brought exactly this braisa, right? This braisa was brought down. When we explained that braisa over there, we explained the braisa was where there was a third party involved. Gazlan just sold the property, and then somebody bought it from him, and that's why there's shevach involved here, and that makes a question on Shmuel. Shmuel says that when a gazlan does not get, the person who buys from a gazlan doesn't get shevach. So how do we reinterpret that Gemara? We reinterpret that, don't answer it that way. Nachman says, no, explain the braisa in a different way. How do you explain it? He explained it as a balkol. So Nachman says, I explain that braisa as a balkol, and that will be a support to Shmuel's position, right? That a balkol gets shevach and nothing else. On the other hand, right, or that the Bachol, the creditor, is entitled to take the Shevach. Not only is that he's entitled to permit him, but he can take Shevach. You guys who ask the question on Shmuel, say the Braisa is the case where the Gazlan is taking it from the, right, from, I mean, the buyer is taking it from the Gazlan, and that's why it's a problem for Shmuel. So I answer it the other way, and therefore I have a proof to Shmuel. Not only I help Shmuel over here, but I have another proof to one of his other statements. Right, Tagi Zach, I have another Braisa. Mokherta de la Chaveirovich Bichov, person sells a property to his friend, and then he improves it. Ubal Bachol Bitarfat. Bachol comes and takes it away from him. Kishu kovat the shevach, yoter al yitziyah, notel at the shevach mivala karka, vayitziyah mivachol. Right, so now there are really actually three components over here. Mara breaks it down into three components. There is now keren, the principal of the property. The principal of the property, the bachol, the creditor has the right to come and take and grab it away. And the buyer has the right to reclaim that from the seller, even from encumbered property. Now you have the shevach. You have the improvement in the property. The improvement in the property is not market increase in value. The improvement in the property is because of an investment that this individual made into the property. So since he made an investment into the property, he has expenditures, and then he has the value that the property now holds in excess of the expenditures he made. Now when the Baal Kol comes and collects it, yes, he's entitled to the Shevach, but he's not entitled to take that without putting out the expenditures, meaning that he has to compensate the individual made those expenditures. You can't just take all the Shevach and say, too bad. He said, no, I invested money, you give me that money. So exactly what I do with the Baal Kol, he goes to the Baal Kol takes all the property, including the Shevach, but he has to compensate him for his expenditures that created that Shevach. Now, the person who owned the property, the buyer, the Lokeach, lost two things. He lost, he lost the principal, which now he goes back to the seller and gets that from his income property. He lost his expenditures on the property that he got from the Baal Kol. What about the increased value? He did create value in excess of the expenditures that he most lost. So that he goes back to the seller for. And that's what he gets out of the seller. So that's what the price you just explained, right? We'll read it again. Tanya Moder Mokher Sadelech Averos sells it to his friend. Vishpicha, and he improved it. Lokeach, the buyer improved it. Ubaba holds, and the creditor comes, but Tarfat takes everything away from him. Kishu Govat the Shevach Yoter Al Yitziyah. Right, when he takes the Shevach, which is in excess of the tziyah, he'll tell it the shevach mibala karka, that he takes from the shevach, the excess amount he takes from the bala karka, from the seller of the property, and a yitziyah, the expenditure he takes away from the balkol. If the tziyah is in excess, the expenditures mean that the value you created was below the expenditure that you made, in the oil of sheer shevach. He only kept at the shevach amount. He's kept. It's the lesser of, we had this in Gemara Baba Kama, right, where the Uman makes a mistake with the object, he only gets the lesser of the shevach or the tziyah or the expenditure over here. Same thing, he gets the lesser of the shevach from the Baal Kol. The Baal Kol will be the only payer here. He'll pay him the excess value that he created. So Gemara says, "Hi Shmuel, but my Mukimla." Now we run out of ways to explain this according to Shmuel. So far, we've given exceptions to Shmuel's rule. All of Shmuel's rules have come up with exceptions to say that there are certain instances where you do collect Shevach. Right? There are instances we said, if Shmuel comes up to this line that when you buy from a Gazlan, you can't have Shevach. You don't get Shevach. So then we came up with other cases, we say that he does get Shevach. So he explained that he's at the Baal Kol, he explained that he's Kana Miyazo, he had other Karko, he explained all these other ways. But basically now we come up with the principle of Shmuel, which Shmuel says that a Baal Kol, when a Baal Kol comes to collect, he collects from his Shevach. Shmuel seems to make a statement that the Baal Kol, the creditor, comes to take everything, and he doesn't have to pay a dime. This braisa suggests that he has to make up the expenditure that he makes over here. So how is Shmuel going to say, even Lokeach migazlan, even going to explain that to Shmuel that this is a case where he bought it from a gazlan, kasha reisha. Then the reisha is the problem for him. Why? What does the reisha say? Reisha says that he goes back, he gets shevach from the seller to him, the gazlan, owes him sheva. Really? Shmuel said before that the gazlan owes no money, that the guy who buys from the gazlan only gets ma'ot, gets no sheva. That's not going to work. All right, so now what are you going to say? Right? You have the cash ratio, Dama Shmuel, Kech, and Gazan, Lezay, Shvicha. Eva Baal Chol.
That's the Rebbe.
Yeah, next thing, Rebbe, right? Eva Baal Chol. Every time I had a Baal Chol over here, cash ratio, this Seifa. If it's a Baal Chol here, then the whole thing's a problem for him. Why? Dama Shmuel, Baal Chol, go back to Sheva. Right, but he says, number one, the Baal Chol takes everything. Right, he takes the whole entire Sheva, he makes no payment. And then you can collect that Sheva, right? You can get it back from the seller, the entire amount from the seller. There's problems from two sides. Mar says, Ibai same of Okeach and Gazlan. So what's the answer going to be? We're going to create a case of Okeach and Gazlan where you're entitled to Sheva. What are those cases? Karka, where he has Karka, it's not that the Gribbits, or Konami Ado. Right, that's the answer. Ibai same Okeach and Gazlan, so maybe Shlok Karka, the Gazlan is Karka. Inami, Bish Konami Ado. So those are two possibilities. Ibai same of the Balkov. That is the case of Baal Chol. This is the Gemara that we saw in Baba Kama together. But that, even when it's a Baal Chol, the Baal Chol is only entitled to the Sheva. Right, it's Lokash, time to Sheva from Megiel to Ketzvayim. Time to Sheva, Sheinu Megiel to Ketzvayim. That's to do with what type of Sheva we are talking about here. What's the difference in the Sheva? We'll look at Rashi here. Rashi is slightly different, and that actually makes a big difference. It's slightly different than what he wrote in Baba Kama. Rashi in the top of the Amud Bet said, Karov li katzer. It's close to being harvested. He invested in a property, and the property now grew something, and it's close to being harvested. It was just dying trees in the karka. They still need the land. Or in that case, they're like finished payrolls, right? Therefore, the Baal Chol cannot take them without putting out expenditure. So according to Rashi, when it's Shevach, when Magia is Tefayim, when Shevach and Magia is Tefayim, what does Magia is Tefayim? Shevach that already is so far along that we're not going to let him take it without making the expenditure paying for it. There's Shevach that's early on, which we're going to say is basically part of the Karka. It sounds like it. So it's a part of the Karka, then we send him take the whole thing and we don't have to make any expenditure. On the other hand, there's something that's so far along that it's really not, almost not like part of the Karka anymore. Even though it's within the Karka, it's still not part of the Karka. It's a payroll group. It's so far along where say you could take it, but you're going to have to put out the expenditure for it. Right, that's the way Rashi explains it. Rashi, in the Gemara in Baba Kama, actually leaves out one word here. He says that it's currently kazer, but he leaves out the word tzrikim the karka. They still don't need the property. Tosfos over there says he doesn't, Rashi's explanation doesn't understand this. And one of the reasons he says is because it's not tzrikim the karka. If not tzrikim the karka, it's obvious that he has to pay the tziyah, because they have nothing to do with the karka. Why should we go back to Shevach anymore? So here Rashi is a little, that one little phrase changes it. Tosfos gave two explanations there. What's magia the kitfayim? Tosfos gave one, magia the kitfayim means that stuff that you take away on your shoulder. Anything that can be removed from the property, Shevach that can be removed from the property, that is Shevach, that is as the Baal Chol can take. Stuff that's not removed from the property, so for instance, trees. If they have trees are not taken. If he planted trees, the trees are not taken from the property. The fruits of the trees are taken away, carried away from the property. So the fruits would be something that is Shevach, right, that is not Magiyat HaKitfayim, whereas the tree is something Magiyat HaKitfayim because it stays with the property. And Rabbeinu Tam gives one explanation, he gives another explanation, it's a type of Shevach. The Shevach that comes from Torah, that you make, you put, you know, physical investments into the property, that is, right, that you cannot connect the property, because that's something that's totally separate. Property, the value of the property that went up, it sounds like almost memela, that went up by itself, whether it's market value of the property, or whether it's property grew things, without you doing anything to have them grow. In that instance, that's stuff that they can take away, because that's still classified as part of the property. That's the way Tosfos explains it. Now, the Gemara has a problem. There are problems with Shmuel. Shmuel allowed the Baal Chol to come, creditors to come along and take away not only the Keren, but Shevach. And Shevach says, Magiyah is a Ketfayim. According to Rashi, that means stuff that's fully grown and still needs a karka. According to Tosfos, stuff that is part of the property or stuff that you invested in. He lets the Baal Chol come and take it. How could he explain it? According to this way, Shmuel, he's letting it go. But it says, Lokasha. It depends on how big the loan is. The creditor has the right of question here depending on how big is his claim. How the Masik Beit Kishir Ara B'Shivcha? How big is his claim? Is his claim both the Karen, the principal, and the Sheva? In that case, we let him take everything because he really has a claim that's big enough to take everything over here. Adalo Masik Bey El Kashir Aro. That over here is a case where he only has a claim against the Karen. The case where he only owns the Karen, he's got to pay him back he's got to pay him back for it. He's not entitled to the Sheva because he only has a claim up to the point of the karka. So he takes it.
Because
you can say that that's your expenditure. He'll pay an expenditure. The shevach he'll get from the mocher, from the seller.
So the guy who's in the game.
Good question. You have an excellent question. Right. The Gemara reads over here like what I'm saying, which is that he only has to pay out the yitziyah, he has to pay the shevach. Rashi has to do a somersault over here to explain this Gemara. Let's read this Rashi together. It was bothering me last night. Your question bothers me. Why should he get the anything, right, above and beyond? The Bryce says that he only gets the yitziyah. He only has to pay the yitziyah expenditures, he has to pay the shevach. So Rashi says over here, he looks at Bryce and Rashi, there's right next to Rashi in the book, Mar Shlis Hashet says, Babu Kama Tzayah Kayam is best. Right next to it says in Rashi, Hilka. 2, 4, 6, 7 lines down. It says, Hilkach, Yohi Bachov Lokeach Shvachay. Like you were saying, let's say he pays them the entire Shevach, Umisalikle, and he gets rid of him. Behind the Nakat, the milk table is shown in Siyah. Oh, the problem is that the Bryce doesn't say he pays Shevach, the Bryce says he pays in Siyah, he pays the expenditures. Here we're trying to explain a Bryce, and we're saying, okay, he pays the expenditures, but we're calling it expenditures, but it's really the whole amount, it's the Shevach. So why does he do that? Velo tana nukto keneged achlo mibal karko moter mibal both, right? Does it just say, oh, he gets the claim of up to the amount of his loan and the rest stays there? Why not? Lashmiina he gufa. Coming to another picture, the ato deheka the yisya yisera l'sheva. What happens if the expenditure is in excess of the sheva? In lo yisya shur sheva. The teacher says that in that case he only gets the expenditure up to the amount of the sheva.
Right,
we learned that already. Right, but he says that's the way the price was formulated in order to cap him out at the lesser of the Shevach or the UCI. It's still not so simple, because the term that's used is UCI, not Shevach. You want to use the term, it's Yitzera, but he says he uses the term UCI, but UCI the Shevach. It's really not such a clear term in the price. But Rashi deals with exactly your question, Yossi, which is that, why are we going to allow him to take anything over here? The Baal only has a loan up to the amount of the car, he should get no gain here. Right? Because he does. He pays for the whole thing. And the Lashon is a strange Lashon, and has to explain the fact that he gets the lesser of his Yitzhiyah or Sheva. And now, the Gemara says, okay, that is, that goes well according to one who says, if the buyer has money, he could pay off the creditor and say, take the money, and I'm keeping the land. The Baal Kol Shafir. So in the case where the Baal Kol, the creditor has the upper hand and say, I don't want your money, I want the property, then this works well. But, in the case where the buyer has the upper hand, and he can say to the Baal Kol, to the creditor, take the money and leave me the land, then he should be able to say to him, name a lay, if I need money today to pay you, I could pay you the money, and you would get nothing here, you would only get up to the value of the property, because that's the only thing that was encumbered over here. Why can you take the entire property and then pay me off, right, the expenditures over here? Why do you have a right now to pay me off the expenditures and take the whole thing? You know what you should do? Take the amount of the property up to the value of the property, and then the excess leave me in property value. In that, why should you be entitled to take the entire property, including the Sheva, and then pay me money for the Sheva? Instead, let's do this. You take the Karen, and whatever the Sheva is worth, you leave me then the amount of the property, because I have the upper hand here. I could have paid you off and gotten rid of you over here. That's true. Then I have a right to this property, just, or even a bigger right to this property than you do. So if you're going to take, only take up to the amount that you don't owe me. If you owe me money, leave me that property instead. But says, I'm my skin, so just sell put the key. This case we made is directed collateral. Directed collateral, once it's directed collateral, then you have no rights. When you as a buyer, who buys something after there is directed collateral over there, you know that you're taking risk. Not only are you taking risk for the Karen, but you're taking risk for any investment in that property, that it could be taken away from you, that you will get none of that property back. Right? Since you're taking risk in that case, in that instance, you can say to him, listen, I'm going to pay you back, but you have no rights to this property. I have first rights to this property. This property is mine. I will take the entire property. If I owe you some money, I'll pay you off. So that's fine, but you're not going to have any claim against this property over here. Now, in all the cases here, the buyer did not know that the property was stolen. He did not know it was hot merchandise. And therefore, we have questions about it. What about Hiki or Ba? If he knew it was hot merchandise, he knew it was property that was stolen. She'enu shelo b'lachat. And nevertheless, he bought it. He bought the stolen property, even though it wasn't his. Amarav, Mahut Yishlo Shevach Ein Lo. So it's clear here, right, in the case before, when Rav says he gets the Mahut and the Shevach, it's clear here that he could not accept any risk, he could not incorporate in his price, right, the fact that he may not get back anything. Whereas here for Rav, what's the possibility? If he knows it's stolen, right, if he knows it's stolen, then the Karen, right, he gets, Rav says the Karen he gets back, but then the Shevach was his own problem. He knew it's stolen, he knew it's hot property, hot merchandise. When he buys hot merchandise, then why should he get the Shevach back? He invested at his own risk. Right? Shmuel Amar, a few ma'otin. Shmuel says, listen, if he knew it was stolen, he bought it with knowing that it could be ripped out of his hand and he'd get nothing back. So Mar says, okay, why is this? Why may I play? What are they arguing about? Rav Sabar Adam Yodeh Shikarka in lo, right? Then a guy buys hot merchandise, property like this. He knows he's not buying the property from him because the guy doesn't own the property. So when he buys it, he's basically saying, look, I'll take the property and you hold on to my money in the meantime. You're taking my money, watch my money, take it as a pikadon. Alright, why didn't he just say to him, take this as a pikadon? Take it as a pikadon. He says, never loan me kado. He wouldn't accept it. Either he wouldn't accept the pikadon, or, truthfully, he wouldn't allow the property to go to him. So he wants to have this property, use the property, and let the guy hold the money as a pikadon in the meantime.
And there's no shevach for the Shmuel?
No shevach for the Rav. Rav says no shevach here because it's stolen. So whatever he invested his own risk. He knew when he bought it, it was stolen property. If he bought it so properly, when he invests it knowing that he could lose it, everything that he puts in there.
So, but if he was a picadon, so...
So, picadon is the money, the picadon. So, he gets his money back, but he doesn't get his shevach back because his shevach was on his own risk. Shmuel, Savar, Adam, Yudea, Shikarka, Enlo. Right, this guy doesn't own the property. This Gomer, but not the Shumatana. And he gave the money, he gave it as a gift to this guy. He took the property. So, he says, name it later, Shumatana. They didn't give him as a gift. Sifale Nilsa. Guy's embarrassed, he's accepted as a gift, he's embarrassed, whatever the circumstances, he couldn't have him give it as a gift. No? Then they argue about this issue once before, we had this in Kiddushin. In Kiddushin, when it's Itmar Makaisha Ta'chuto, someone tries to establish Kiddushin with his sister, Rabba Mar Ma'ot Chodrin, you get the money back. Rabba says you get the money back from your sister. Shmamar Ma'ot Matanat, you can't get the money back from your sister. Rabba says you get it back. Rabba Mar Ma'ot Chodrin, Matayadim Shein Kiddushin Tosim Ba'chuto, a person has you can't marry your sister. Therefore, Gamar Atal Shim Pikido. Gave it to her as a pikadon to watch it for him. V'nei malah l'shum pikadon. Tell her that he needs her to watch some money. Says, "Never love me, kabbalah." He says, thinks that she won't accept it. She won't watch it for him. So she does. I don't know exactly what type of pikadon this is, where he has to trick her into watching the money for him. Okay, but shmuel amar ma'ot matana. The money is a gift. Adam yodeh shein kiddushin tosim ba'chuto. A person knows that he cannot marry his sister. The government on the shum matana. Therefore, he gave it to her as a gift. So when I says, "Name malah l'shum matana," says from matana. Sifalam hilso again. She's embarrassed, accepted as a gift, so he gives it to her in this backhanded method. Tzricha, we need both cases. We need argument by Kiddushin, we need argument by the selling of the, buying the hot property. Why is that? Dima Brahal, in that case, Bahakamar Rav, Tulab, the Inchi, Darmi, Matanot, the Nukhra. Over here, Rav, in the case of the land, where he buys the land, it's because nobody gives a gift to somebody that's a third party guy doesn't know on the street. But maybe like Kiddushin, he would agree to Shmuel and say that he gifted it to his sister. Because the person would give a gift to his sister, right? Mamoti like, Shmuel, maybe agrees to Shmuel. Be'it, Mabahach, he only said the case of Kiddushin, Mabahach, Mamar Shmuel. In that case, Shmuel says it's a gift because it's his sister. But, Abba, in the case of the land, Mamoti like, maybe he'll agree to Rav that it's not a gift, because why would you give a gift to some guy out of Joe Shmuel that steals property? Alright, so Tzricha. So therefore, when you bank us, Ben the Rav, the Gemara says, Ben the Rav, Damar Tukadon, Ben the Shmuel, Damar Matanah. This bothers me as soon as I read it. This guy is basically, he knows it's stolen. He's paying money, and we're saying according to Rav and Shmuel, Rav says it's a pikadon. Shmuel says it's a matanah. Great. Okay, so as far as the money's concerned, he did something with it. Right. But what about the property? You know, he has stolen property here, and he's using stolen property. What's he thinking right now? This is what I said. Ben Rav, Damar Pikadon, Ben Shmuel, Damar Matanah, Hala Arav, Michael Nochis. What right does he have, this guy who knows it's stolen property, what does he think gives him the right to go to this property and use the property in the interim? He knows it's stolen, and we're making up all sorts of answers about what he does with the money, okay? But the property itself, he goes and uses. Why is that? The payroll, take the offfield. And how is he eating the payroll? He didn't compensate for that, he didn't buy it from the guy. He says, Sober. He says, thanks, this is what he's thinking. This is how people justify what they do in life. Sober. Ano Achit says, I will go down to the property. The Arab Iabe, right? The Echol, the Gabe, he hates the Tabaka, all the Idihu. He says, I'm not doing anything more than the Gazlan would have done. Gazlan would have used the property and the payload, so I'm just replacing him over here. The Chi'ate Maridara, when the owner of the property comes, Zuzin Abu, right? So, see, we'll give him some money, right? We'll pay him for whatever it is, Zuzin Abu, we'll get him the money back. Whatever it is, that money, we'll get him back. I mean, that's whatever it is. The Rabda Mar Pikadon, Pikadon. What does it mean that we're going to give him, I gave the money back, you'll get the pikadon that I gave this guy, then we'll give him that back. That gift, that money will be given back from the gazlan, and the guy will get his money back. So he basically is justifying the sale, because he says in the end he'll get compensated for it. So since in the end he'll get compensated for it, then he justifies his position now to go down to the stolen property and use it, because says, I'm not doing anything more than gazlan. Then the nigzal will come and get his money back from the gazlan. I gave him the money, he now has enough money to get it from the gazlan. either through the pikadon that I gave him, or through the matana, there's money that's floating around here that's going to go back to the nikzav. Amar Rava. So Rava now goes. Now we're going to sum up the whole sugya here about Shmuel's principles, all these other. First of all, help yourself. Yesh lo ma'ot, v'yesh lo shevach, afa pish lo perish lo v'shevach. So again, Shmuel, passing like Rav over here, that when it's a case where you bought from a gazlan and you did not know about it, you bought from a gazlan, you did not know about it, you're entitled to both Karen and the Sheva. There's no Mexican ribbit, you hold like Rav, that you can get both back even when you don't explicitly have that mentioned in the contract, you're entitled to both. Number two, Tikir ba Shein Shalom. In the case where you buy hot property, stolen property, then, what? Shein HaShalom, L'kapcha Me'aot, Sheish Lo, Shevach Ein Lo, again, like Ralph, he gets the Karen back, the money he gets back, because it's like a pikadon, Shevach Ein Lo, the investment he made, he did it at his own risk, knowing that it was stolen, and he does not get that back. Achrayut, this is like Shmuel, Ta'ut Sofer, who? That Achrayut is a Ta'ut Sofer, but Ben Bishtari Alba, Ben Bishtari Mekach Umemkar. What? Shmuel only said it by Alba. He did not say it by Shtari Mekach Umemkar. If you like Shmuel, he says that by Shtari Alba. It's a mistake. But he also says in Shtari Mekach Umemkar, it's also a mistake that people don't buy property without having recourse in the property. That would undermine my position that when people buy, right, they can assess the risk and they would do it even without the, even without that. Right, so now, by Mine Shmuel, Mirab. Shmuel asked Mirab, Chazar Lachami Babi Marishonim. What happens if the gazlan then goes and buys it back from the original owners? Meaning that he stole it, then he sold it, and now he wants to make good on this, so he goes back to the original owner, he buys it. He measures it, you know, free and clear, he buys it from the original owner. What's the din now? Mahu. Amalei, ma makalo the rishon, the sheni, kos buchi devo the adult. When a person sells the property, he sells it with any rights that he has. What rights are that? Now, later on, when the gazlan goes and buys it from the original owner, he's buying the true or real ownership over it. When he does that, here he has sold all his rights to the second guy. When he sold that right, what? No, but the rights, not about owning it, rights, any rights I have, anything I will exist for me in this property, you own as well. So later on, when he also buys the property, gets true ownership of the property, he sold that already to him, and he sold the property with that right, so he'll get to keep it. Now we don't say, what, the second guy who bought it is on the hook because he's on the hook, he bought hot merchandise, never he's out the property, and then, right, so according to Rav, when he gives him back the property, he gets Mahot back, he'll ask the Sheva. But the guy who bought it, because my wife said he'll keep it. No, he said no, that it passes through. Everything passes through the buyer, because when he sold, the gazlan sold it, he sold him every right that he would get. So my time, huh? So Mer says, why? Why would the gazlan do such a thing? Why would we say that the gazlan sells the property, would buy the property, right, if he knows that he's going to get nothing for it? I mean, that it would be one thing if we say he buys the property, and now he's going to get keep the property plus the shevach, and the guy who bought it from him is only going to keep the karen. So he loses the shevach, so he has some advantage to doing this. Amar says, why would he do this? Amar Zutra, Amar Nechalei, the lowly crank gazlan. He doesn't want to be called a thief. Besides that, he wants to do tshuva, he doesn't want to be called a thief. He sold the property, he wants to clean the whole thing up, so he buys the property. Rav Ashi, Amar Nechalei, the liko behamute. He wants to stand by his word, that he can keep, the guy can keep that property. Now that he doesn't want to be called a gazlan, but he wants to upkeep his word, he wants to keep his word. So my benayah, is there any difference between them? So Amar says, he can benayah to meet lokeach. This is the case where the buyer dies. Mando, Amar Nechalei, the lowly crank gazlan. This is a case where he doesn't want to be called a gazlan. What Rashi says the case here, by the way, is that Chazar Alav Kamina Balim, Rashi says this, that after he bought it. After he bought it, he went and bought it back from the Balim. Chazar says, no. That's very close. If you look at the last close story, he says, Mitzel Kepesh Rakhi Ashulav Chav. The guy died, the Lokeach over here died, after he already bought it. Right? So he bought the property, right? And then the Lokeach, the buyer, died. Chazar says, no. He says, Minyad Shikana Gazlan Zachabo Lokeach. That's the case, if he was still alive, the way Rashi says it, as soon as the gazlan buys it, it goes directly to the lokeach, and there's nothing to talk about here. But to be sure the mitzvah, but the oh, just because he died, he loses his right? No, because it says, El Yishu Mar, the mitzvah, Kodim Shalok HaGazlan. That he died before the gazlan buys it. So then if he died before the gazlan buys it, what's the question? The question is his children. The children of the lokeach, do they get to keep the property of the lokeach? That's the question for Antitosis. Alright, so now, you go now to Mitzvah, okay, Manda, my name is Lady Lily Craig Gazlan, no, he doesn't want to be called Gazlan. The guy's dead. Right? So then, what does he care? The guy's not going to call him a Gazlan anymore. He's not around to call him a Gazlan. Umar, Manda, my name is Lady Lily Day. He wants to keep his word. But even hey, now my name is Lady Lily Day. He also wants to keep his word with the children. So you can say to me, soap, soap. In the end, Carlay, Bene, Lokeach, Gazlan, no? In that case, Kokeh is going to call his children thieves also. That if you want to be called thieves, the children are going to call them thieves.
So
yeah. Allah, you can be nice, I'm coming here again. The meat gazlan. Because Gazlan dies. Manda, my nechle, linche, lo, kray, gazlan. Hamid. He's dead. There's nothing to talk about anymore. Manda, my nechle, lo, kay, mo, mute. Akanami, afgad, the meat, nechle, lo, kumay, mute. Want to keep his word? So the children will buy the property to protect him. So, Carlos, nay, bne, gazlan, huh? They may call him a gazlan, they're going to call him the children of a thief. So it's not going to help him. He didn't sell it to the last guy, he gave it as a gift to him. He wants to keep his word. He wants to keep his word. He gave a gift. He wants to uphold the gift. So he'll buy it to protect the guy that he gave the gift to. I gave it to him as a gift. Didn't work out. I'm sorry. So he came back. What do you mean? You're going to call me a gazlan over here? You didn't pay anything for this property. You got it as a gift. What type of claim do you have against me? You're not going to call me a gazlan. So he's upholding his word. Yes, he wants to keep his word and give the gift. I'm not a gazlan. He's not going to call him a gazlan. He didn't steal anything from him because he didn't pay anything for the property. So there's nothing to discuss over here.
All right, let's stop here.